Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. Our guest for this full hour of in-depth conversation about a man much in the news, much evident in the debates, including the one that happened Sunday night, about the U.S. relationship with Russia. And it's to that point, David, that I'd like to turn next. Again, our guest is David Satter, a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute and visiting scholar at the Johns Hopkins University School of Advanced International Studies, the author most recently of The Less You Know, The Better You Sleep. David, I'd like to turn to this question of why accountability for Putin's conduct is so important, both to understanding the nature of the man we're dealing with and to the future of not just U.S.-Russia relations, perhaps, but the future direction of Russia itself.
We often have these various exercises in the U.S. in which a bunch of people get together and they offer their theories on the question, who is Mr. Putin? Of course, what they do is they take the facts and then apply an American frame of reference. And they come up with various theories, none of which, of course, are very meaningful. To really understand the Russian situation and to understand U.S.-Russian relations, you have to bear in mind that Putin came to power as a result of an act of terror carried out against his own people. Hundreds of randomly chosen individuals were simply murdered in order to advance the political ambitions of one man and those who were dependent on him. Under those circumstances, a reset policy, or a policy that is based on trust and the assumption of common interests, is hopelessly unrealistic, because the Putin regime cannot have based on an act of terror, cannot have common interests with democratic countries which insist on transparency, rule of law, due process, and respect for the individual. And so that's the point of departure, and that needs to be the point of departure in the discussion of every issue that arises between the U.S. and Russia. We recently had a situation in which Secretary of State Kerry made an amusing remark. He got up and said that Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov lied to my face. You know, when I heard that, I wasn't taken aback in any way by Lavrov's behavior, but it was unbelievable to me that Kerry expected something different. And this is just an example of the kind of wrong-headed thinking that pervades America in relationship to Russia, and why, in fact, it is so difficult for us to form effective policy, because we start with a false point of departure. We take the view that this is a country that has interests just like ours, that we can find a way of working together to advance our mutual interests. We have no mutual interests. The Russian government is dedicated to nothing more profoundly than its own survival. It doesn't even have mutual interests with its own people, and it would happily slaughter them if that was what was necessary in order to keep this small clique in power.
Well, and that's really what your anecdotes about what Putin did with these apartment bombings.
Oh, and not only the apartment bombings, we have, you know, the provocations in the 2002 Moscow theater siege, the 2004 Beslan school massacre, and even the war in Ukraine, which was launched on the basis of a purely fictitious explanation of events and has so far led to 10,000 dead.
And a lot of other strategic repercussions as well. But are you saying, David Satter, that the Moscow theater and the Beslan School episodes were also engineered by Putin? I mean, when you say provocations, what do you mean by that?
Well, for one thing, there were terrorist gangs that took over in both cases. And the leaders of those gangs were released from Russian prisons only days before the events took place. They were in prison. Several days later, they show up as the head of terrorist gangs, taking hundreds of people hostage. Warnings were received repeatedly and ignored. The evidence in both of those cases is that the Russian authorities were well aware that those terrorist acts were being planned, that they did nothing to stop them and in fact facilitated them. And then when they took place, their first goal was to slaughter the terrorists who they themselves had helped set up, and were completely indifferent to the fact that they also slaughtered hundreds of innocents. No, it's a grim, grim, grim world. It's a dark world.
It is indeed. Let me ask you about one thing that we are often told as Americans, and that is, as you know, and have chronicled so brilliantly again and again, David Satter, Russians are accustomed to, if not actually sort of hardwired to accept, a despotic leader, a czar, if you will. To what extent is that at work here, do you think, in terms of what we're told is Putin's popularity? First of all, is he in fact popular? And more to the point, is this something that is kind of in the Russian DNA?
Well, I don't think anything is in anyone's DNA. There's a long tradition of subservience to the state, and the Russian society breaks down people's resistance to the state. The Russians find themselves in a rightless and helpless situation, in which they're encouraged to take consolation from the fact that they're citizens of a great power. They're also encouraged to believe that the interests of the state are supreme and actually have precedence over the rights of the individual. But the Russians, under the right circumstances, are fully capable of understanding the value of the individual. But they need a break in the existing social situation. There was a possibility for that after the fall of the Soviet Union. But in fact, that possibility was lost. And the reason for that was that when the change began, when the process of so-called reform began, it began, unfortunately, on the same distorted basis or on the same false basis that had provided the mental framework for the Soviet Union. The idea that the rights of individuals are not important, that everything, all that matters are the social and political goals of the regime. Of course, under the communists, it was building communism that was the supreme goal. But under the so-called young reformers, it was building capitalism. It didn't matter if that capitalism was lawless. It didn't matter if the property that had been created through the joint efforts of the entire population was parceled out to criminals. None of that was important. What mattered was to achieve the not very well thought out political and social goals of those who were in power.
Let me come back to you momentarily with what might be a lightning round on a lot of issues that I want to make sure we cover before we let you go. David Satter, the author of The Less You Know, The Better You Sleep, Russia's Road to Terror and Dictatorship Under Yeltsin and Putin. Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.